Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days. I mean, days
I feel like the waterfall of thoughts. Every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala, New York podcast.
And we're talking about meditation today. How about that? Meditation. This is actually a great talk. If you are new to meditation or if you are experienced, we all experience many of the same pitfalls, many of the same misconceptions, or just it's hard sometimes, meditation. Why is that? And how do we get through it? Or how do we approach it so that it is not so daunting and not so frustrating? Well, this is the talk you have been waiting for. Jane Stevens is a teacher of several years in the Shambhala Buddhist tradition, meditation instructor, Shambhala Buddhist teacher, and she gives a talk which was recorded at our weekly Dharma gathering. This was actually recorded on Valentine's Day a few weeks back, just about this topic, about meditation. So let's get to it. Visit our website, ny.shambhala.org, for more information about our classes and weekend retreats. Our introductory meditation course, which is called Meditation in Everyday Life, is happening next on April 6th. Check it out. Click classes and programs and scroll down to April 6th to see and to register for that or any other program in our curriculum. And now, take it away, Jane.
I couldn't decide on a topic for tonight's talk, so I decided that since meditation was in the title of the location, that this talk would be about meditation. And because I like, it's Valentine's Day and I love horses, I'm going to use horses and horseback riding as an analogy. So just so you get a little preview of what's to come. So if you don't like horses, don't worry about it, because obviously you like meditation. If you don't really like meditation right now, you can enjoy the horse analogy. Something for most of you. When we sit on the cushion and we first begin to meditate, who would like to volunteer a thought about what their experience is like? Maybe one of the more expert or experienced meditators could offer this. What's going through your mind when you're meditating? What is your experience like?
I was thinking today how I felt short of breath when I first closed my eyes and why that was. And then when I started to unpack that, I became actually more anxious than more relaxed. So there's an interesting component to mindfulness about whether you can catch yourself and sort of get back on the beam, so to speak, or if it takes you a little bit further down. But almost always, the longer I sit, I can tend to right myself. Not as quickly as I may have liked, but you know, at the end of 30 minutes, I feel much better than I did when I first sat on the cushion.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Can anyone else relate to that experience? Yes. So there's more. Another perspective?
I usually, for the first 10 or 15 minutes, feel like the bringing my mind back to the breath or the object is really challenging. Like, I feel like it's very like chattery, and then bring it back, and then chattery, and then bring, you know, and I'm perpetually doing that. Sometimes it's for the entire time, just like really just back and forth the whole time. But often it usually seems after about 15 minutes that it's that I'm able to sort of at least become more fluid with it, like more sort of like I'm able to think more about doing it gently, and if I'm lucky, or if I'm in a good space, it becomes much easier to sort of stay with the breath for a longer period of time.
Great, thank you. There are two commonalities between what the two of you said, which I actually wanted to take a little bit of time to unpack or describe in a little bit more detail in meditation practice. So this is how I like to think of it. This is how I understand the way that my mind works. There are two components of the many components of our mind and our brain. There are two components specifically that I wanted to talk about. One is this strategizing, thinking, hamster wheel quality, the strategizer, the thinker, the analyzer. There's that, the mind has that ability, that talent to strategize, think, analyze. I have to tell myself what to do. It's time to get up. It's time to brush my teeth. It's time to eat. It's time to go to work. It's time to do this. How do I figure out what's going to happen in the future? What do I think about what's happened in the past? That's a component of our mind. Another component of our mind is this ability to focus or lightly focus, ability to be attentive, to maintain our attention on something. Like I'm talking and you're all paying relative attention to me. So your attention is in the room. And there's also a component within that attention and awareness. We develop an awareness. So we're not developing something that doesn't already exist when we're meditating. We're working with what we already have. So we have attention and awareness in one component, and we have strategizing, thinking, and analyzing as another component. Follow? Okay, so what happens when we're on the cushion? We have these two components, and we have these instructions for practicing meditation, and those instructions we tell ourselves through our thinking and thought process. We are telling one component of our mind to be attentive or to be aware, that is the direction. So our attention and our awareness is given direction in some way by our thought process. And we're aware, because we've told ourselves to be aware. But when we're meditating on the cushion, when we're sitting on the cushion and practicing the technique, our mind wanders. We notice that our mind has wandered, and then we have to bring our attention back to our breath, the object of meditation, and start over again. So we are exercising, the way I describe it is we're exercising this muscle of returning our attention to the breath as it enters and leaves our body. But what we use every day, all of the time, is this other component of our mind, which is much stronger, and it's much larger and more prominent, and that is thinking, analyzing. Thinking, analyzing, strategizing. We use this all the time, especially in New York. So we have this really strong Popeye arm of thinking and analyzing, and we have this really olive oil, wimpy side of awareness and attention, because we don't need it that much. So what we're doing here with meditation practice is actually balancing these two components by in essence, teaching ourselves not to the attention and awareness component teaches our critical, analytical, strategizing component what's too much instruction, and what isn't enough instruction. So there's a feedback that happens. So when we reach that mysterious critical point of samadhi, right? So where we're cool, we're calm, we're collected, we're spacious, we're paying attention, we are aware, we have this mindfulness and awareness going on in our practice. And we're right there. There's a balance. It feels balanced and steady, all right, and stable. And we call that a stabilized mind. So that's balanced. So that is, what that is the ability to use both components, both aspects of our mind, well, skillfully, together, and properly. So that's what we're training to do when we practice meditation, is really utilize our mind in an effective way so that we have a flow and a flexibility to our mind and a sense of relaxation. Because our attention and awareness understands its place in the world. Like, what am I supposed to be doing? I am doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I've been given direction. But what we tend to do when we run into problems with this, like, something's happening and it doesn't feel synchronized or coordinated, what we're doing, we're not happy with it, we're too tight or too loose, we're too spaced out, or our mind is jumping around like a Mexican jumping bean. When those kinds of things happen, it boils down to communication. So is the critical, analytical component understanding the language of the awareness side? Are they listening to each other? Well, attention and awareness is listening, always. That's its talent and quality and ability. But the strategizing and the analytical side tends to overdo it and also tends to misread what the signals are of awareness and attention. Attention and awareness is there's so much tension on this side that you see it expressed in lack of attention, lack of awareness. Because this side of our mind is like, forget it, you know, you're riding my ass, and I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to do it anymore, and I don't want to do this. Forget this. Meditation doesn't work, you know. Doesn't work. This isn't happening. Nothing's working for me. I feel even more anxious than when I came in the room. So what I'd just like to suggest to you and point out is that communication is something that we do not only with each other and between humans, but it's something that we do within ourselves, within our own minds. And sometimes it's just a matter of understanding what the language is. The barrier to improved meditation practice and progress in your meditation practice can be as simple as understanding what it is that you are trying to tell yourself. So part of that means getting real with yourself, being honest. I mean, you don't have to talk to anybody about your meditation practice. Nobody knows what's going on when you're on the cushion. So it's a beautiful opportunity to just be honest with yourself. Know what you know and know what you don't know, or don't know what you don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to tell myself. Well, let's see. My neck is killing me, and my back hurts, and I can't concentrate on anything, and this whole thing feels really intolerable. It's impossible. It's unworkable. I just can't meditate. I can't sit here for 1 minute more. That's it. Now, that whole thing is narrow. It's a narrow point of view. You're really limiting your awareness of what the whole situation is. So, hey, lighten up, right? I can't do it. I'm not doing it. Maybe what it is that maybe you're being a little bit too aggressive with yourself. Maybe you're trying a little bit too hard. Maybe you're doing what you do when you're out in the world and you're really pushing or pressing a little bit more than you like. And we want to like meditation practice, right? Because consistency produces results. We want to like what we're doing. Both components, both sides, both aspects want to like what we're doing. Both aspects are seeking balance. So rather than treating yourself as the number one most wanted enemy of yourself and thinking even more critical thoughts about who you are, what the situation is, and getting on that hamster wheel or like a rat on a wheel and just like cycling through all of that, rather than doing that, maybe you can understand and ask yourself, what am I trying to tell myself? Am I trying too hard? Do I need to just relax a little bit? Is everything really okay right now and I'm just doing fine? Are my expectations too high? Lower your expectations in meditation practice. Please do yourself a favor and lower your expectations. There is no achievement that you're going to make in this millisecond. It's consistency and constancy. Consistently coming back, returning your attention to the breath in the present moment. It's not a state that you move into and then stay in perpetually. We're human beings, so we have ups and downs. This is part of our experience. We are living organisms. Everything changes. Our meditation practice will change. So what can we do? If we have good times and we have bad times, we can just be. It's fine. We can get out of our own way. We can stop thinking that we have to have the answers, or that we do know the answers, or that we do know what's going to come next, or we do know what that person is going to say. We can consider the possibility that our feelings of boredom may actually be our analytical mind being a little bit too aggressive with our attention an awareness component, right? Maybe we're just being a little too aggressive. And attention and awareness component backs off, right? It's like, that's too much. So instead of really looking deeply into what our experience is, we just simply make it louder, like, hey, I'm bored, come back to the breath. Bad you. You're being bored. Come back to the breath. You're not doing the technique right. Oh, there's another chance to punish ourselves. It's an increase of aggression when the initial boredom is and could easily be a signal of I'm pushing too hard. If I'm bored, I'm pushing too hard. To consider that possibility. So it's the language. How do we talk to ourselves? How do we understand ourselves? So that's meditation. And I've been talking about meditation, but actually this is horses too. It's the same thing. Now I get to the fun part for me. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about riding horses, what it's like to ride horses, and what it takes to ride well. I know what you're thinking. You want to know if horses meditate, right? I don't know. They could do anything. Here's what I do know about horses. Horses are like, when I was describing this component, and this is why it's an analogy, because it's remarkable to me how similar the experiences are for me personally of sitting on the cushion and practicing meditation and riding. So a horse, you have to become bilingual with a horse. You have to understand horse language in order not to get injured, first of all, and also to understand what is being communicated. They don't speak English. As much as you might say, good boy, or good girl, nice, you know, good going, or stop, walk, trot, canter. You can say any kind of words you like. They don't speak English. They don't speak any language except their own. We have the ability to pay attention. They are doing nothing but remaining in the present moment. They are attention. They are awake all of the time. Like, we get distracted by our thoughts. They are not distracted by their thoughts. They're in their situation 100% of the time. Because they're prey animals, they have eyes on the sides of their head. We have eyes on the front of our head. We are not prey animals. We are predators. So in that sense, it's remarkable that a horse tolerates us at all. But they actually like us, and they like interacting with us, and they like teaching us. And I like being taught by them. So they are this, if you can think of them as I'm talking, they are all attention, awareness. They are all sensory. They are all muscle memory. They have their own minds and their own brains and their own awareness, but they are awareness. And they have nothing to do but watch you when you're around. And as a person coming into a horse environment, walking into the barn, they're all awareness, and I am all wrapped up in my thoughts and the drive from New York to the barn and everything that's gone on and what's happened in the past and what's happening in the future. All of this is going on in my mind, so I'm all wrapped up in my thoughts. And I go out there for a breath of fresh air. Well, they're all fresh air, right? They're all awareness. So those two components I was describing, riding a horse is like the horse rider is the analytical mind, the critical mind, the strategizing mind. Because I have to tell this horse where to go when I'm on its back. And I have to do everything right. And I have a whole set of instructions to follow. How do I handle the reins, what my seat is, where I'm sitting on the saddle, what I'm doing with my legs, where we're going. I have to have a plan. I'm in the driver's seat, so to speak. There are all kinds of responsibilities that I have as a rider. The horse has a responsibility to be aware of what's happening and be aware of what my cues are. You can't do two things at once. So you can get on a horse and, like when I first started riding a couple years ago, get on the horse, and I have all these instructions in my head, and I'm all really busy getting my reins up perfectly because I want to ride perfectly. And off we go, and I love it because, you know, we're moving forward, and the air is blowing, and the horse is running around the ring, and my trainer is yelling at the top of her lungs. It was really humiliating. But, you know, it was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, what? This is fun. And it's like, you know, it's like you've thrown the reins away and you've done this and you've done that. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's sit up straight, blah, blah, blah. So there's all kinds of things going on that, right? Strong back, soft open front. You're sitting on your cushion. Locate your breath. You know, we take ourselves through these instructions step by step in a very reasonable way. And then we place our attention on our breath. And then when we notice we're thinking, we come back. When you're on a horse, there is no thinking involved. You are either thinking or you are riding that horse. But the horse itself, because it is all awareness and attention, it understands that you are thinking. It understands when you are not paying attention. And when it understands that you're not paying attention, it just goes wherever it wants to, and it does whatever it wants to. And I thought I was having fun and I was having a great time. And of course the horse knows that too, because they know when you're smiling. And it, you know, it's like, oh, great, you're having a good time. You want me to go faster. And then, you know, and then suddenly it's you're out of control. Because the trainer says, okay, now stop. But you know, I can't stop the horse because the horse has already got all of this momentum going. And it knows that I like it. It's like it was like the wild, wild west out there. And it wasn't pretty. And it isn't pretty a lot, even now. But this is just like meditation practice. Right, you're either thinking about the instructions or you're resting your attention on the breath and maintaining awareness. But they aren't both happening at the same time. Is this making any sense? So what we're doing with meditation practice is cultivating our ability to understand how to hold ourselves, using the analogy, how to hold the reins, how to sit up straight, and prepare ourselves for paying attention in a relaxed way, right? Relaxation, fluidity, synchronization, all of these things happen when we are present in the present moment. And not lost in our thoughts and not thinking about things all the time. Thinking about everything all the time. So I think the only difference between really riding a horse and practicing meditation is that there are more wake-up calls when you're on an animal. When you're riding a horse, because they have their own minds. They're there for you. They're there, they're waiting, they're ready, they're listening, and they want direction. They want to know where you want to go, and they want to take you there. And they want to take you there in a balanced and relaxed and fluid way, because they're having fun too. When you're having fun, they are having fun as well. So developing a skillfulness in how we approach ourselves when we sit and how we conduct ourselves and how we listen to ourselves and how well we understand both languages that we're speaking, nonverbal languages, our language of attention and awareness, our language of critical thought, strategizing, analysis. They're both needed, they're both necessary, but they need to be used appropriately and together, right? Otherwise, you're running around the shrine room, mentally, of course. You know, speedy is not riding in control. Being speedy is just a quality of mind. So we can develop our skills. We can develop what we have to the extent that we become useful to ourselves, understandable to ourselves, and useful to ourselves and also to the world. We become available to the people that we love. The horse can talk to me now. I can understand the signals that the horse is giving me, some of them. I haven't gotten kicked in a while, or stepped on, or thrown off, or bucked off. This comes from listening deeply, listening as much as possible, as well as maintaining the instructions. Yeah, I think that's it. If there are any questions or comments, now is a great time.
Well, you spoke about horses a bit. I was just wondering if there's still a component of dressage in the Shambhala community?
Yeah, there's something called the Wind Horse Division, which is basically inactive because it's esoteric, and where would we put a horse and a barn and stuff like that? And it takes years and years of dressage practice to really become skilled enough to be able to teach it. So there's only like two or three people that are qualified to teach dressage. But it is, yes, it is dressage. But it applies to, you know, any riding discipline, except maybe thoroughbred racing.
What is your advice for how to deal with physical pain as you're meditating?
Yeah, that's a good question. Keeping with the horse theme, horses are in pain a lot, and they can't really express it in a way that humans typically understand it, an untrained human. So it's great when you notice when you're on the cushion that you're in pain. It depends on what kind of pain it is. Low back. So that's oftentimes it's a postural issue. If you're sitting for a long period of time, or once you start sitting more consistently, your posture becomes more and more important. To have an upright back and a soft, open front. And because we work on computers a lot, most of us, there's a tendency to C forward. Your body takes the shape of a C, and that pushes out your low back. Very important to make sure your knees are below your hip flexors when you're meditating. Always, even if you have to sit on a cushion with your knees in warrior posture, which is both knees down rather than legs crossed. You don't want to be gripping your knees with your hands because that creates a triangle of tension and it pulls on your low back. So if you're having low back issues, low lumbar issues, especially, you want to sit up more straight and pay much more attention to shoulders. You know, this is true in riding too. Shoulders over your hips. shoulders over your hips, and head resting on the top of your spine, not pitched forward, which can also pull things forward. So it's that kind of, while you're practicing meditation, also practice your posture of keeping that going and understanding that that is as important as what you're doing with your mind, because the mind tends to follow the body, and the body follows the mind. So as the body calms down, the mind calms down. But if you're experiencing pain, then you're nagging your brain too at the same time. So the point is not to sit through pain. The point is to remain comfortable and not have your body position be an obstacle to your meditation practice. Okay, if you have serious pain, like back pain or whatnot, you can meditate lying down, you know, if you're in a hospital. There are all kinds of ways to work with yourself. But if you sit down okay and then you begin to experience pain, there's an adjustment that needs to be made, and there's no recommendation to sit through that. You should definitely listen to the nonverbal message. Okay.
You're talking about these different kind of modes of awareness and the analytical brain and then the attention. And I definitely notice a very harsh relationship going on, or tight relationship going on, and I'm curious about the different... But also when I try and shift that, it feels like more strategy, you know? And so I'm curious about the different ways to shift that, and also methods for making the attentive place more pleasurable, more of a place I desire to be.
Yeah. Yes. So I think I understand what you're saying. What I would recommend is a sense of humor. First of all, you've got to find something funny in the situation that you're in. Right at that moment, there's got to be something funny. And if you're like, there's nothing funny about this, you know, something's up. That even in itself sounds ridiculous, right? So there's that. We can have a quality of being too tight, and it's only because that's how we typically use our mind. It's an habitual pattern. We by out of habit, can do that. So this is, we're creating a new habit, right, of lightening up, of taking hands off. So it could be as simple as recognizing that everything is okay, everything is perfect. If you can remind yourself that everything is perfect right now, and there's nothing that needs to change. Everything's good. Copacetic. You know, allowing the mind to rest is the primary directive. Right, awareness. What we don't want to do is try to control awareness, right? Like a horse with the reins. It's like you're asking it to stop, and you're kicking it with your feet to go at the same time. Those are two signals, and the horse is confused. Like, do you want me to stop or do you want me to go? And it just, you know, it's trying to communicate with you, and it wants to give you what you want, but you're giving it two different signals. So I think when you're practicing, just sort of check with yourself and see, are you sending yourself, your own self, two different signals? And if you are, just, oh, I really want to send this signal. And don't worry about it if you're sending two signals. That's how we learn, and that's what we do. Kindness, being kind to yourself. Sense of humor, kindness, gentleness. That's what we say, because that's effective. That's what works for people. People like that. Kindness. Hi.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the analogy. I used to ride years ago up in Woodstock. There was a horse that I knew, and had a real bond with him. And I've just raised the bar in my practice a few years ago. I started meditating more consistently, and I'm finding the same thing is happening. There's a bond with my just sort of an awareness, the spacious awareness that's non-conceptual. And it's the closest I've come to some sort of sense of emptiness in my practice. And it, the more I'm able to be in that place, it really helps to just not, you know, it's not so much pushing thinking away, it's just, it's moving toward the awareness. And it creates a, it's really helped me to just accept that it's a process. And it's not gonna, it's not like a light switch, and it's not something I can actually attain. It's something I set the conditions for, and by practicing, and it kind of happens. So I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
A fellow horse person. Hey.
I grew up with horses. Well, two horses, but I really appreciate you bringing them back in a way for me that I was able to, I had a moment when doing the second meditation of kind of thinking, gee, if I treated myself the way I treated my horses, I think I would be a much happier person. You know, really trying, what are you saying? What do you need? Oh, you need soothing. Oh, you need, you know, rather than just, you're not doing it right, you know. I was much kinder to my, and you kind of awoke that for me, that memory and that. So, thank you.
Can I ask one other quick question? Mm-hmm.
It was really helpful, the sense of, you know, aligned spine and all that. I get a lot of lower back pain, and especially today for some reason, and it's really distracting me and it's annoying. But any other thoughts or suggestions?
Yes.
To be aware.
You should never sit in those chairs that you're sitting in.
Oh, really?
Those folding chairs are the worst if you have low back pain.
I find it actually helps.
Because you're able to use the back for support up here?
I'm able to allow my back to relax more. It's harder when I'm sitting cross-legged. My lower back gets tense.
Okay,
that's
fair.
Just for me.
I would suggest trying a different chair here, even.
Oh, okay.
One that is more flat when you're meditating. The folding chairs are angled in such a way that it pushes your knees up above your hip flexors slightly. And that adds more strain to your low back. I'm not a doctor, so I'm not sure what your issues are with your low back, but generally lumbar low back pain is a result of the C curve, and we want to be more straight. And to help our backs, we don't want our knees to be above our hip flexors, and those chairs will tend to do that and aggravate a back that's in pain.
I just find that when I'm more conscious, I mean, I'm not doubting what you're saying, but mm-hmm. I just find that when I'm more conscious of finding the right position that
yes.
you know, I'm just listening to my body.
Yes.
I think that's, for me, that seems to help.
Thanks. Listening to your body and increasing the flexibility of being willing to change, willing to try something.
Sure.
Rather than just you know, rather than just simply avoiding the pain, try something new, you know, with your body.
I'm also, just as an aside, I'm going through a little physical therapy to help with it. And they kind of, you know, really went at it yesterday. So it could be just that it's because of that. But I'm just trying to become, I think awareness is really helpful.
Yes. Exactly. We just don't know. I mean, every day is different. Every day is different for everyone. And if we're gentle and aware, that's half the battle, at least.
It's so dependent on core strength.
Yeah, there's a whole physical component. there's the mental meditation component, but there's also the physical component. So finding our way through that involves developing an intimate relationship with ourselves on so many levels. And we aren't taught that in the Western world. We just aren't. They don't teach that. Like, oh, pay attention to your body in a certain way. We weren't raised that way. So this is almost like new information for us. Yeah, I think everybody, especially guys and especially women and especially everybody. Well, thank you for coming and good luck with your meditation practice. I hope this was helpful, useful, and everything.
This was helpful, check, useful, check, and everything, check. Yeah. Thanks, Jane. That was a great talk. Hey, visit us at ny.shambhala.org for more information about classes, weekend retreats. Again, Meditation in Everyday Life, our introductory course on meditation is happening next on April 6th. Email us at podcast@shambhalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions, favorite horse-related anecdotes, whatever you got, we'll take it. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. But if you are in the New York area, come say hi. Our weekly Dharma gathering is every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, where you can hear these talks, meet other meditators. You don't have to ride the horse of meditation by yourself. Okay, later.